Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we knew the Republican presidential field would get crowded, and it's getting more crowded by the day and almost by the hour this week. In fact, we've got two entries to talk about today. The one we're going to focus on most is yesterday's announcement by former two-term Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, who, of course, ran in 2012, started just hovering around 1% and ended up winning, I think he says, 11 states in this first soundbite. But here's his announcement on Wednesday that he's making another go of it in 2016.
I know what it's like to be an underdog. 4 years ago, well, no one gave us much of a chance. But we won 11 states. I am proud to stand here among you and for you. The American workers who have sacrificed so much to announce that I am running for president of the United States.
And Santorum says it is those workers that will be the focal point of his campaign.
The largest pro-worker immigration group just published a survey that showed that only one candidate got an A standing behind American workers, and he's standing here today.
So, Jim, a lot of people counting out Rick Santorum. I guess they did 4 years ago as well, but it's a much different field this year. A lot of new candidates, a lot of people who kind of talk about the same things Rick Santorum does, but obviously it's a guy who found some resonance 4 years ago.
That's probably the strongest argument against the cynics in this one. They'd say, it's a crowded field, and he's way too socially conservative, and he can sometimes be off-putting in the way that he says these things, and he looks a lot like Woody from Toy Story. So what chance does he have? Well, people were saying the exact same things 4 years ago, and Santorum did decently. He came in second. He got more than 3.7 million votes, I wrote this morning. And there are a couple of things that were odd about his announcement. Clearly, you can tell he's beating the drums on economic populism. That certainly seems to match the moment. Also of interest is that he's kind of adopting the Jeff Sessions, Scott Walker position of wanting to limit legal immigration as well. But the other note that kind of jumped out at me yesterday, Greg, is that he chose to announce his campaign in an interview with George Stephanopoulos. Greg, now, is there any reason anyone can think of why you wouldn't want to do an interview with George Stephanopoulos?
Not an honest broker.
Didn't we just have this discussion about how he's a Clinton Foundation donor? And I thought we were all going to boycott him, and I thought we were all going to boycott ABC News. I thought we had decided that if you're a big Clinton Foundation donor, you can't cover a presidential race where Hillary Clinton is running. And then Rick Santorum comes along and says, nah, he's cool.
Maybe he figures he's going to get squeezed out of that Fox debate, so he needs to go somewhere else because he's not going to be.
Or alternately, if the interview goes badly, he can turn around and say, well, what do you expect? He's a Clinton Foundation donor.
The other announcement that just happened earlier this morning, in fact, so quickly we don't really know exactly what he talked about, but former New York Governor George Pataki is now in the race. A lot of people wondering why that was. In fact, his consideration of it made our crazy martini in the past, but Jim, obviously, he starts off pretty much bouncing along the bottom as well. But anybody who won three times statewide in a deep blue state, I'm sure will be taken seriously and probably should be taken seriously in this race.
Yeah. Yeah, he should be taken seriously, Greg. I'm with you. And we apologize to all of our listeners who are hanging on every word and sitting on the edge of their seat saying, what did George Pataki say in his presidential announcement today? What, this is, I've been itching that you can just feel the Pataki mania in the air. But we wish him his best of luck in his effort to run for president of New Hampshire.
All right. On to the bad martini now. And one of the people who is considered to be top tier and may still be top tier. We haven't seen any polling since yesterday. But that was Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. One of the things, of course, he has to overcome is the impression, which he pretty much confirmed yesterday, that was attached to his father and now to him, that he's just not the type of person that the Republican Party wants to lead on foreign policy. He appeared on Morning Joe on MSNBC yesterday. Joe Scarborough kind of asking him about Lindsey Graham perhaps joining the presidential race just to be a heat-seeking Rand missile. And then this exchange ensued.
Lindsey Graham would say ISIS exists because of people like Rand Paul, who said, let's not go into Syria. And what do you say to Lindsey?
I would say it's exactly the opposite. ISIS exists and grew stronger because of the hawks in our party who gave arms indiscriminately, and most of those arms were snatched up by ISIS. These hawks also wanted to bomb Assad, which would have made ISIS's job even easier. They created these people. ISIS is all over Libya because these same hawks in my party loved Hillary Clinton's war in Libya. They just wanted more of it.
Now, Jim, there's a lot of people in the Republican Party who don't see eye to eye with Rand Paul, who get a little tired of hearing people like Lindsey Graham and John McCain wanting to seemingly go fight everywhere and arm everyone. But that's a long way away from saying that they created and strengthened ISIS, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, he was doing fine up until that statement. And then that little bit of hyperbole, that little bit of, man, you thought my previous arguments are bad. Here's this, really kind of stretches it. Yesterday, I wrote a piece on NRO about his filibuster. And the headline, which I didn't write, but I'm not going to disagree with, said that the filibuster he had done against the Patriot Act flopped or it failed. And a lot of people said, well, wait a minute, they haven't renewed the Patriot Act. How can you say it flopped or failed? Well, there are a lot of Republicans who are wary about the NSA's operations and the current writing of the way the Patriot Act has been interpreted by the Obama administration. Rand Paul, the party is in a more libertarian place than it was during the Bush years. So he's got this opportunity, and a lot of Republicans have come around. They have this idea of the USA Freedom Act, which they think puts enough restrictions on the NSA. Rand Paul says no. Well, so far, nobody else in the Republican presidential field, and really, as far as I can tell, not a lot of the congressional leaders are willing to say, okay, we're with you, Rand Paul. We want the entire program shut down. USA Freedom Act is too much of a stretch. And I think it's statements like this one that kind of make it tough for Rand Paul to lead the party. That, in other words, like, here he has an issue in which I think a lot of Republicans would be receptive to what he has to say. And he takes a position so far out that it's too far for, you know, it's too far out there for a lot of Republicans to go. And then the next step is he'll turn around and he'll say something like, these guys created ISIS. And then every Republican who disagrees is like, all right, to heck with you. And I guess that's maybe a good segue to the reaction of some of the other folks in the field.
Yeah, the one getting the most attention this morning is Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal. He minced very few words. He says, we are not ready for another 4 years of someone who doesn't get the biggest threat that we face globally right now.
I think the senator is unsuited to be commander in chief. We can't afford 4 more years of a misunderstanding of the threat. We need a president who speaks with moral clarity, with honesty, that looks the American people in the eye and describes the threat we face in radical Islamic terrorism.
Jim, it'll be up to the primary voters, of course, to determine if Paul is up for that job. But given the emerging significance of the threat that we face in the Middle East and beyond and a lot of foreign policy challenges, it's going to put Rand Paul on the defensive in a lot of different ways. And after comments like yesterday, it's possible that he deserves it.
Two words that jumped out at me in that statement from Jindal there is moral clarity. As we were discussing, you know, that little soliloquy he puts on Morning Joe, when he says, hey, we shouldn't ship arms to the opposition against Assad in Syria, you know what? That's a legitimate argument to make. You're going to see Republicans disagree with that. There are some people going to say, whoa, 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 this is our best way of influencing the situation short of direct involvement militarily. And then there are going to be people who say, wait a minute, we don't really know these guys. How do we know there aren't diehard Islamists in the bunch? This is a, you know, bad idea. The same thing with opposition to Assad, although, again, you know, when he says these crazy neocon Republicans wanted to oppose Assad, Assad did poison people, right? I mean, that seems like a good – you know, if you poison hundreds and hundreds of people using chemical weapons, I think we should do something about that. I don't think we can just say, meh, no big deal. And so he's in an area where he's got perfectly defensible positions that smart people who care about this issue are going to disagree with. But then he goes to, they created these people. And at that point, you don't have moral clarity because, no, we're not the bad guys. We're not the ones who are saying, hey, ISIS, go do that. And the idea of suggestion that anybody in the U.S. government does or is, it's just a bad faith argument. And it's one of those things where I think that's a bridge too far for lots and lots of Republicans.
The blowback, not only from candidates, but also just in social media and elsewhere, was pretty vociferous yesterday. And we'll see if Rand Paul changes the tone or even specifically addresses those comments sometime soon. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And we should say right at the outset that compared to yesterday's bad martini, in which there are reports of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State essentially selling arms to countries that donated to the Clinton Foundation, some of them nefarious regimes, this story is probably not quite in that category. But yesterday, Hillary Clinton was in South Carolina, and something seemed to change about her dialect. Here's a couple of examples.
I am running to live again at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I'm aware I may not be the youngest candidate in this race, but I have one big advantage. I've been coloring my hair for years.
So, Jim, that harkens back to this awkward moment, I think from 2007.
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
Now, Jim, a couple of thoughts here. Number one, she spent many years in Arkansas, which is a southern state, and hailing from northern Michigan, when I go home, my dialect tends to change when I'm around people who speak like the way I used to speak when I was growing up. And so there could be a natural just falling back into that habit. But the way she does it just seems so contrived and unnatural. And it's just a really, really bad southern accent, too.
Greg, how many syllables are in the word year?
Should be one.
Right? Year. Right? Year. Year. You are, when she says it, you know, there's like four or maybe 14. Here's the thing, you know, by the way, while that whole time she was in Arkansas, apparently she was a Yankees fan all along, or at least so she claimed in her 2000 Senate race. This idea that she'll be whatever the audience in front of her wants to be, and she'll do it in this transparently phony way. And what's really kind of fascinating is there's not a single South Carolina Democrat in that audience who's willing to say, look, Hillary, we're voting for you. We love you. You don't have to pretend to be Southern. Just speak in your normal voice. If you sounded like you had a really thick New York accent, we'd still vote for you. Just stop. Okay, stop. You know, it's bad. It's grating my ears. You sound kind of like Joe Pesci in My Cousin Vinny. It's just not a convincing Southern accent. And people would say, we'd all just pretend, okay, fine. You know, okay, she's not really from the South. Grew up in Illinois. Yes, you can see a little bit of a variation in the tone of her voice depending on where she lives and things like that. I've went through an extensive dialect program to lose my New Jersey accent early in my life. But the idea, it just comes across as so phony, and just it's really at the heart of like what she's about. Because if you asked her, you know, what the whole campaign is about, it's all about helping people. It's all about gender equality. Building a better and safer world, Greg. And yeah, and of course, when you find out she's, you know, she's dealing arms at the State Department, you know, and the whole thing is run as a favor factory and things like that. It's just this unbelievably dishonest approach to who she is and what she does and what she stands for that putting a fake accent on it, I guess it's just the cherry on top. Or the cherry on top. Which, you know, top also is a 14-syllable word.
Yes. And guess, America, just guess which story has gotten more attention. Hillary Clinton's arms sales to Clinton Foundation donors or controversy about whether her accent is legit? It's B, in case you didn't know. Jim, it's going to be
maybe
a long...
You and I talk about the arms dealing in a different accent.
Yeah, why can't we combine them?
You know, here's the thing. You know, there are. If you ask most people in the U.S., in the Pentagon, they would say that these giant arms sales to countries that aren't always friendly to us, it's a danger to our military. And if you ask the British, they would say it's a danger to their military as well. I have always wondered how NATO works when we can't agree on how many syllables are in the word military. Because to them, it's military. This is a military operation.
It's what international compromise is all about. That's where it has to start, I guess.
3.5 syllables?
Yeah, exactly. Well, until Hillary's president, and if she's making a speech in the South, then who knows how many syllables
it'll
have.
I bet you they add the extra syllable because of the metric system. When you're measuring the word in centimeters, it gets, yeah.
So. It's all about conversion. All right, Jim, on that note, have a fantastic day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Carrey of National
Greg. I'm pretty into Dana Carvey doing George Herbert Walker, but Greg.
He's Jim Garrity at Ashton Review. I'm Greg Corumbus, Radio America. See you tomorrow for the Friday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.